I'm Stacey Wright, and this is The Right Kind of Book Talk. This is episode 7. Woo! Obscure fiction. The weirdest genres you may never have read. It's time to step out of your comfort zone and see some of the most interesting genres you didn't even know existed. Now, I was introduced to the dark side of fiction by the way of an itty-bitty little post, and the book was called The Haunted Vagina. I thought, this has to be a joke. Someone is razzing me. There is no way there is a book called that. Wrong. And here is the synopsis for the book. It's difficult to love a woman whose vagina is a gateway to the world of the dead. Steve is madly in love with his eccentric girlfriend, Stacy. Typical. Unfortunately, their sex life has been suffering as of late because Steve worried about the odd noises that have been coming from Stacy's pubic region. Yeah, this is all true. She says that her vagina is haunted. She doesn't think it's that big of a deal. Steve, on the other hand, completely disagrees. When a living corpse climbs out of her during an awkward night of sex, Stacy learns that her vagina is actually a doorway to another world. She persuades Steve to climb inside of her to explore this strange new place. But once inside, Steve finds it difficult to return, especially once he meets an oddly attractive woman named Fig, who lives within the lonely, haunted world between Stacy's legs. Okay, you may be stunned into silence right now, but readers, this is a real book. But before we dive into this week's weird episode, let's see what new releases will be hitting the bookstores today. A Breathless Sky by Veronica G. Henry, which is a fantasy. A Cruel Thirst by Angela Montoya, which is a young adult romantasy. Christmas by Candlelight by Andrea Pickens, that's a holiday romance. Deep Fury by David Freed, military thriller. Frankie by Graham Norton, which is a women's historical fiction. God of Wrath by Rena Kent, which is a mafia romance. I Died on a Tuesday by Jane Corey, that's a psychological thriller. The Gravity of Us by Brittany Cherry, which is a young adult, and that's a contemporary romance. There's some really excellent books out this week, and I highly recommend The Gravity of Us, and thanks to Brittany Cherry and her publisher for my gifted copy. Okay, so now that we've established that this is a real book, where does this book fit into the literary world? It's the genre aptly named Bizarro, and oh my God, this rabbit hole was huge. Mildly terrifying, vast, and very surprising. So let's look at what bizarro as a genre actually looks like. So bizarro fiction is a contemporary literary genre that creates weird, subversive, and entertaining works by blending elements of absurdism, satire, the grotesque, and pop surrealism. Bizarro fiction writers may also incorporate elements of science fiction, fantasy, historical fiction, non-fiction, and the surreal. Some say that bizarro fiction is the literary equivalent of a cult film and that its influences come from anime, David Lynch, and cyberpunk. I literally had no idea that this genre was even a thing. Like, no clue. Now, don't get me wrong. I know there are some really weird books out there, but I just assumed that they sat on the fringe of one of the mainstream genres. Like, I assumed that splatterpunk was purely just extreme horror. But nope, it's a whole genre all on its own right. And it's time to explore some of these comfort zone crushing genres and see what kind of genres there are out there and if any of them might actually interest you. So do you love and seek out weirdness? Do you want to read things that stimulate your imagination and maybe make you see the world a little differently? Are you sick of things that are boring? Now this might be the genre for you to try if you haven't already. Believe it or not, it actually became a genre in around 2005, and Satan Burger by Carlton Mellick III. It really became a huge success, and it launched this incredibly diverse genre. Now, the term bizarro was actually created by three independent publishing companies, Eraserhead Press Publish, Afterbirth Books, and Raw Dog Screaming Press. These companies sought to label a style of writing that was weird, quirky, and campy, but didn't fit into other genres. This is all really fascinating. Like, I had no idea about any of this stuff. And I literally thought I had my finger on the pulse of the literary world because there are no genres that are off limits to me. But I see now I am missing out on so much. Like, what rock was I living under? And were the snacks even any good? So I took my sheltered butt off to Kindle Unlimited and got The Best of Bizarre Fiction of the Decade by multiple authors. It was a pretty long book full of short stories. I gave it a read, and my favorite one was Fire Her Dog, and the most disturbing one was Ant Colony. Like, oh, yeah, major creepy shudders. Let me read you a few quotes from the book to give you an idea of just how off the wall these pieces of fiction really are. I love watching him eat. Teaspoon after teaspoon disappears into his mouth. His saliva coats the spoon surface with stuck granules that change its color from silver to a crusty white. I cannot decide if he did me a favor or if I'm a victim. When I try to think, all I can feel is the sugar fluid and a rage that comes when I find myself, after our feedings, somewhat hungry. Weird, eh? Another one is, he turned away from it all then, away from the rows of houses, the endless streets, the orb passes, killing machines, and the factory and its god. As he walked, the world peeled slightly at its edges, the bright tip of something different shined through. Ralph could barely see whatever it was, but somehow it seemed like stuff from memory. Some wordy weirdness right there. And the last one. The clouds are blistering brown black smoke dragons, pregnant with thunderbolts. Okay, I quite like that one. The stories are actually really well written. Graphic. There is some real talent in the writing, and I was actually very surprised at the level of expertise that goes into these works of cult fiction. What kind of books fall into this category? House of Leaves does. I actually had no idea, and I wonder now if this is one of the reasons why a lot of people didn't understand the book, because it is very Golgothic. And I think unless you know and can appreciate the genre for what it is, I think it can get lost in translation. I really do. Now, what are the top five books for this genre? Actually, this is according to Goodreads, because I didn't really find much else about it anywhere else. So number one was Unclean Jobs for Women and Girls by Alyssa Nutting. In this darkly hilarious debut collection, misfit women and girls in every strata of society are investigated through various ill-fated jobs. One is the main course of dinner. Another, the porn star contracted to copulate in space for a reality TV show. They become futuristic ant farms, get knocked up by the star high school quarterback, and then have secret abortions, use parakeets to reverse amputations, make love to garden gnomes, go into air conditioning ducts to confront their mother's ghost, and do so in settings that range from hell to the local white supremacist bowling alley. These were all short stories. Yeah, I think I'm going to add that one to my list. Number two, We Live Inside You by Jeremy Robert Johnson. We are within you, and we are growing, watching, waiting for your empires to fall. It won't be long now. We are the fear of death that drives you, and the terrible hunger that reshapes you in its name. We are the vengeance born from senseless slaughter and the pulsing reptile desire that negates your consciousness. We are the lie on your lips, the collapsing star in your heart, and the still warm gun in your shaking hands. The illusion of control is all we'll allow you, and no matter what you do, we live inside you. Yeah, that one I'm searching for right now. I'd love a paperback copy of that one. Number three. Quicksand House by Carlton Mullick III. You must never leave the nursery. If you leave, you will certainly die. Tick and Polly have never met their parents before. They live in the same house with them. They dream about them every night. They share the same flesh and blood. Yet for some reason, their parents have never found the time to visit them, even once since they were born. Living in a dark corner of their parents' vast, crumbling mansion, the children long for the day when they will finally be held in their mother's arms for the first time. But that day seems to never come. They worry their parents have long since forgotten about them. And when the machines that provide them with food and water stop functioning, the children are forced to venture out of the nursery to find their parents on their own. But the rest of the house is much larger and stranger than they ever could have imagined. The maze-like hallways are dark and seem to go on forever. Deranged creatures lurk in every shadow, and the bodies of long-dead children litter the abandoned storerooms. Every minute out of the nursery is a constant battle for survival, and the deeper into the house they go, the more they must unravel the mystery surrounding their past and the world they've grown up in. If you ever hope to meet the parents they always long to see, like a survival horror rendition of Flowers in the Attic, Carter Mellick III's Quicksand House is the most gripping and sincere work to date. This one's actually available on KU if you're interested. And as I said before, Carter Mellick III is actually like almost like the father of the genre, if you like. So he's definitely one to have a look out for if you are interested in trying the genre out. He seems to be the most popular author anyway. Fourth, By the Time We Leave Here, We'll Be Friends, by J. David Osborne. Siberia, 1953. Stalin is dead, and a once prosperous thief named Alek Karaka is feeling the pressure. Trapped in an icy prison camp where violent criminals run the show, betrayed by his friends and his body, Alek is surrounded by death and disorder. Bizarre Inuit shamans are issuing ever-strange commands, but he must obey. Opium is running scarce and bad magic is plentiful. Razor-toothed gangsters can smell Alec's blood and they plan to murder him more than once. Enlisting the aid of an aging god, a cold-blooded killer, and a beautiful murderous nurse, Alek must now secure his getaway by finding a calf, a gullible prisoner to be cannibalized when the tundra is at its most barren and the vice grows tighter and life in the gulag becomes increasingly surreal. Alek must hurry to find his mark and convince him. Now this one actually, it sounds really good, but I don't know. Like, I think that might be a little bit out of even my wheelhouse. Number five, The Dead Heart Shelters by Forrest Armstrong. He was also one of the names that popped up quite a lot in my research. Never fall in love. Never try to escape. Born into a life of brutal slavery, Peter spends his days driven into the wild by vicious dog masters, forced to pick delicate swamp berries from the skeletons of dead reptiles. His nights offer only the brief escape of hushed conversation and the strange magnolia perfume of fellow slave Lily. A moment's opportunity turns to violence, and Peter is thrust into a bizarre new world populated by devious goatmen, poisonous coal slugs, and murderous royal processions. With the help of his newfound companion, a man-sized infant called Dirt, Peter must decide between embracing his narcotic new world or returning to his old life to save the beautiful souls haunting his dreams. With a unique poetic prose style, Forrest Armstrong delivers a surreal and resonant bizarro parable for all those who find themselves trapped deep within the dead heart shelters. Ooh, okay. I think I like the sound of that one too. I think that might get added. So you might be wondering what other authors that are notable are in the genre. And I actually found quite a few. So we have Andrew Wayne Adams, Duncan B. Barlow, David Brockie, G. Arthur Brown, Cullen Bunn, Jeff Burke, Justin A. Burnett, Brian Alan Carr, if this is just in case you're making a list, Garrett Cook, Jace Daniels, D. F. Lewis, Simon Logan, Stephen Lowell, Thomas Lucas. Now, I had a quick look at some of the authors and what they've been writing, and there are some really great titles out there if you're interested in having a look. Something I did notice, these books all are either novellas or compilations of short stories. I get the feeling that being overly wordy isn't what this genre is about. It's about full impact, throat punch, did not see that coming works of art. I'm a bit disappointed that KU didn't have more of these kinds of books available, but some of the authors mentioned have other works available through KU. So if you are interested in the genre, you can at least give it a shot without buying books. I contacted my local library and the lovely lady on the phone had no clue what I was talking about. And I wasn't going to enlighten her and give her a heart attack. And Libby was a complete bust for me. So I hope you have better luck with your library. Okay, so what did I think of the genre as a whole? I kind of liked it. I want to start a shelf dedicated to the genre, and I will be definitely looking for some more bizarre fiction for my 2025 reading. So I mentioned splatterpunk, but what is it? Splatterpunk is a horror genre with no limits. Splatterpunk is gory, graphic, violent. Abuse and sexual violence litter its pages. Splatterpunk defines itself by intense body gore and expressly describes anguish and most of all pain. Splatterpunk books describe in minute detail the appearance of someone's intestines ripped from their living bodies or the grotesque features of a monster or another villain. I would say if you don't already dip your toe into horror or at the very least thrillers, this one likely will not interest you in the slightest. But for those of you that like the extreme, let's see what this genre may have to offer you. Now, splatterpunk provokes considerable controversy amongst horror writers. Robert Bloch criticized the movement, arguing that there is a distinction to be made between what inspires terror and what inspires nausea. I love it. It's like horror suddenly got scared because the big bad is coming and they don't want to move over. First of all, the covers of these books are, in one word, terrifying. I was equally excited and frightened, and some really weird anticipation was thrumming through my veins. I went to Kindle Unlimited and I found There Is Something in Your Mouth by Y.M. Miller. I added a few others to my to-be-read list on KU, but this is the one I actually sat down and read. And this is the synopsis. Farming can be hellish. Milking, plowing, murder. Matthew and Julia have struggled with the upkeep of their farm, so when they get the opportunity to join a cooperative that supplies them with volunteers who come to learn the way of the land, they are overjoyed. Now, the barn has become Matthew's sadistic playground. What lengths will he go to protect his deepest desires, even from his wife? Okay, I am not religious, but I did the sign of the cross after I was done with this book. I do not recommend this book if you have any triggers at all, because if I could bleach my eyeballs after I was done reading it, I totally would have. Did I enjoy it? The content disturbed me in the worst ways, but the book was strangely good. Have you ever hurt yourself and the pain was kind of nice? No, just me? Thanks. It was like a train wreck that you rubbernecked to watch. You know you should be a lady and look away, but you really can't. You can't really unsee it either. Has it turned me off reading more? No. I used Kindle Unlimited again because my library was a huge bust. I'm guessing it's not really much for mainstream readers. And I really want to collect the paper versions of some of the more popular books. Like, there are two by Aaron Beauregard, The Playground, The Slob. I've seen a lot of things written about them, so I'm quite excited to try them. Womb by Duncan Ralston and Dead Inside by Chalmer Morrison. They're the ones I'm really looking at adding a physical copy to my collection. Okay, and there was this one book, it was called The Groomer by John Athen, and it wasn't listed as being a splatterpunk, but holy shit, it was graphic as, and I'm really surprised that it wasn't listed this way. Now, a lot of people shelved it on Goodreads as splatterpunk, and I agree with their assessment. I really think that it belongs there. Like, I found the book on KU, and out of all the books I did try, this one grossed me out the most. Like, it still didn't hit my limit, so I'm wondering if I really have a limit. I'm really sorry to my husband, poor man. But seriously, it was quite disturbing. I don't know if I recommend it or not. So what other genres fall into the absurd? I don't read smut, not really. Like, I've tried some of the books like Haunting Adeline, Credence, the Hooked series. They were all okay, don't get me wrong, but I think too much smutty content ruins the overall rating of a book for me. So this next genre is really hard for me, and it was called Monster Erotica. Yes, this is a real genre. Did you know they actually have a term for people who have a sexual desire for non-human? It's called teratophilia, and it literally is the desire for monsters. The logistics, my friend, I just can't. The book The Bride was hard enough for me. The one by Ali Hazelwood, where the two main characters thought there may be some compatibility issues. And that was uncomfortable enough for me in more ways than one. So this was really outside of my wheelhouse, okay? You owe me one. But it's really popular. Like, I'm seeing these books come up in my book groups. And I don't just mean the smutty after dark ones. I mean my normal book groups. And I'm not one to yuck someone's yum, but it makes you wonder how doing the nasty, the dinosaur, or Bigfoot get these readers so hot under the collar. But it does. It really does. And the fan base is huge. And these readers don't play around. They will defend their book choices with venom. So watch out. And you know what? Good for you guys. Like, serious kudos. But for the sake of research, I did do my due diligence. And I took on Wet Hot Allosaurus Summer by Lola Forst. Yeah. It was, I'll give you the synopsis of the book and you can make up your own mind just from that, because I'm not going into it. Tanis was a simple country girl, desperate to escape life on the farm. Big Al was everything she was lusting for, a sexy bad boy connoisseur from the wrong side of the food chain. Would their forbidden love tear her family or her flesh apart? There was another one that I kind of dabbled into, and it was Ruined by Monster Erotica Bundle, and it was H.G. Summers. These were just a bunch of short stories that were compiled and put into a book, but this one really stood out for me. Like, none of them were you couldn't forget them, but like this one I actually kind of could understand, I guess. Like, it actually made a little bit of sense, and yeah. So it was Mated by a Minotaur. I like to think of myself as always being prepared, but then I hadn't quite expected a Minotaur of all things to capture me. He's enormous and beastly, all muscle and horn, with a mind sharp enough to lead. He says he wants me, that I'm strong enough to handle his enormous appetites. I should be disgusted, but all I can wonder is how much he differs from human men beneath that loincloth. Yeah, you know what? It actually wasn't that bad. Like, for somebody who doesn't read the genre, that one was okay. It was all right. But you could, focus, because, it's hard because they describe in detail, what a Minotaur looks like. But anyway, so what popular books are also in this genre? A Soul to Keep, which is Duskwalker Brides, the first book in the series by Opal Rain. Most of these seem to tend to be series, just so you know. Ice Planet Barbarians by Ruby Dixon. This one gets a lot of love on Facebook. Like, I see this book crop up a lot. And I think, even though this is not my genre, I think I might see if it's on KU and just maybe give it a shot, because people say really great things about it. And now I'm really quite curious. Now that I've dabbled in the genre, I'm really quite curious. The Dragon's Bride, A Deal with a Demon, book one by Katie Robert. Now, she writes some really quite fantastical erotica, so that one's probably quite interesting. Stalked by the Kraken, Monstrous Matches, book number one by Lillian Locke. Muscles and Monsters, that's also book one in a series, Leviathan Fitness, by Ashley Bennett. She cropped up as well, like, her as an author cropped up as well. The Beast, Monsters and Beauties, book one by Jenica Snow. As you can see, there are a lot of series. If you're looking into getting into monster smut and you, maybe you enjoy series more than standalone books. Honestly, I'm a little relieved that I made it to the other side mostly unscathed. Like, I haven't read anything during this part of my research that made me want to take a bleach shower. But these aren't the only unique genres. Erotica just aren't for you. But here are a few more genres that might tickle you. So this one is slipstream fiction. So slipstream fiction is notoriously difficult to pin down with a single definition. But at its core, it represents a narrative that straddles the line between the speculative and the literary, often blurring the boundaries of reality and the fantastic. This genre is not just about fantastical elements or futuristic settings. It's about invoking a sense of wonder, unease, or the uncanny stories that feel both familiar and deeply strange. Slipstream challenges in our everyday understanding of reality, pushing readers to question what they know about the world around them. It is this unique blend of real and the surreal that sets slipstream apart from other conventional genres, making it a fascinating field for writers who want to explore the depths of human experience in novel ways. Now, what can you expect from this genre? Okay, some ambiguity. Stories often leave more questions than answers. This is challenging readers to find their own interpretations. Cognitive dissonance. The narrative may combine elements that traditionally don't coexist, creating a sense of unease or perplexity. Surreal atmosphere. The setting or events have an otherworldly quality, even if it's rooted in the familiar. Emotional resonance. Despite the fantastical elements, the core of slipstream fiction lies in its ability to invoke deep emotional responses. Intellectual stimulation. These narratives encourage readers to think deeply about themes, ideas, and the nature of reality itself. Genre blending. Slipstream fiction often incorporates elements from various genres, refusing to be boxed into a single category. Metafictional elements. There's often a self-awareness within the narrative, playing with literary conventions and reader expectations. Now, this one really excited my sense of wonder. I didn't have a lot of time to dig into finding books that fit this genre, but maybe that's something I can do in another episode. So I decided to get a bit more creative in my 2025 reading. And so I decided to add Cloud Atlas by David Mitchell because it fits this genre perfectly. And a host of other genres that it's blended together. And it's been added to my 2025 TBR. The next genre is climate fiction. Now you may be like, what? It's actually cli-fi. So that's short for climate fiction. It's a genre of speculative fiction that focuses on the effects of climate change on our planet and its inhabitants. Unlike traditional science fiction, cli-fi is deeply rooted in the real-world consequences of environmental degradation and explores the potential future scenarios resulting from climate change. The genre provides a platform for authors to convey important environmental messages while engaging readers through compelling narratives. Look, this one did not interest me in the slightest. Like, this is not something I'm interested in at all, but I found a book called The Ancients, a novel by John Larrison, and it actually did sound like my kind of book. So I've also added that one to my TBR for 2025. So next we have ergodic literature. I think that the best and most simple characterization of this kind of literature is that it's interactive. Now, some of you may say, but aren't all kinds of literature somehow interactive? Well, yes and no. In a way, every approach to literature is interactive. For instance, when reading a book, we are definitely interacting with it. However, the interaction is in most of the cases limited by the guidelines that are specified within the book about how to sail through the narrative. In the case of ergodic literature, on the other hand, the interaction is co-creative. Now, what do I mean by that? The guidelines about how to approach the narrative are built between the author and the reader user. Think of it like a labyrinth. Like House of Leaves fits this with perfection. Ergodic literature is not defined by a medium, but by the way in which the text functions. Like, how cool is that? The Illuminae Files and House of Leaves both fit the bill, but seeing as though I've read both of these already, I have chosen S by J.J. Abrams for my 2025 TBR. Furry Sleuth. Yep, this is a real genre and I couldn't be happier. Furry Sleuths, it's a book that features a cat, a mouse, or a dog as the investigator. Very rarely is the protagonist a scaly dinosaur or a feathered chicken. Like cozy mysteries, they tend to take place in small towns. They're typically about a sleuth that's a cat or a dog who has a connection to the police, either through a friend or a husband, wife. They use those connections to sleuth around and discover the criminal. Oh my God, I want to try this out so bad. But for my 2025 reading list, I decided to settle on The Diva Serves High Tea by Krista Davis. There is actually a genre called flash fiction, and it literally means a book with less than 1,000 words. It's like a super short story. I didn't even know they were considered a genre, but I guess now I do. And because I'm adding books like this to my TBR, I picked Gutshot by Amelia Gregg. The next one, hard-boiled fiction, a tough, unsentimental style of American crime writing that begins in the 1920s, brought a new tone of earthy realism to the field of detective fiction. Populated by detectives and femme fatales, hard-boiled fiction uses graphic sex violence and vivid and often sordid urban backgrounds and fast-paced slangy dialogue. Oh, I'm so on board for this one. And what book did I pick? The Postman Always Rings Twice by James M. Kahn. Okay, Nordic Noir. Imagine a private eye story with the internal monologue and everything set in Scandinavia. This genre has morally ambiguous police officers, suspense, psychopathic criminals, and lots of murder mysteries. I've actually read a few books already in this genre. I didn't even realize it. I actually got sent a book like at the beginning of the year. It was fantastic. And The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is a really great example of this genre. And I'm going to reread the whole series for 2025, because if my memory serves me right, I think I only read the first book in that series. I actually own the whole lot. So I think that's going to be a priority for me for 2025, is to start and finish all of them, all the books, or at least what's available. Steampunk is a subgenre of science fiction, fantasy, and speculative fiction that came into prominence in the 1980s and in the early 90s. The term denotes the work set in an era or world wherein steam power is still widely used, usually the 19th century, and often set in Victorian-era England, with prominent elements of either science fiction or fantasy, such as fictional technological inventions like those found in the works of H.G. Wells and Jules Verne, or real technological developments like the computer occurring at an earlier date. Other examples of steampunk contain alternate history-style presentations of things like The Path Not Taken, of such technology as analog computers. These frequently are presented in an idealized light or with presumption of some kind of functionality. Now, I picked The Bone Shaker by Cherry Priest for my TBR. It looks really good, so I'm kind of excited to get to that one. Cyberpunk. This genre narrative focuses on high technology and low life. Okay, what do I mean by that? The tech is bleeding edge, often post-humanistic in its incorporation with humanity. This means things like cybernetic enhancements, nanotechnology, and cyberspace as an actual place. Low life? I mean the criminal underbelly. Often in the best cyberpunk novels, the world is ruled by massive corporations, leaving the regular people to fight over the scraps. Okay, sign me up. And what book did I choose to add to my TBR? The Necromancer by William Gibson. Boom. This was a lot of fun. I love that I found books that will bring me out of my comfort zone, and it will really round out my reading for 2025. I'm really excited. I read a lot of genres, anything from thrillers to fantasy, historical fiction, romance, a little sci-fi. But never in my wildest dreams did I realize there was so much more to see if I just had the foresight to dig a little deeper. And I'm glad that I've done that now. Most books in this genre I've talked about today aren't easy to find for free. It's definitely more niche, And it makes me wonder if people knew about them, whether they would actually read them, or maybe you like what you like and this hasn't made a lick of difference. Maybe you just found out that some of the books that you've read actually fit into one of these genres better, and now you know what to go looking for, and I really hope that's the case for some of you. This literally might have been the most interesting research week for me, and I don't know how I will top it, but I am definitely going to try. Next week is all about the good and the bad of becoming a book influencer and how you could maybe become one too. It's something I already do. I have a lot of knowledge and I'm trying to break it down in a way that you can decide whether it's something you want to do or maybe just give you more information on what kind of things that we do as influencers. Now, let me know if you're going to do any bizarro reading for 2025, because I'm compiling a Bookalorian Bizarre Bingo for 2025. And once I'm done making it, you'll be able to find it on my Instagram at the Bookalorian Designs. I'm right in the middle of doing it right now. I really hope you have enjoyed this episode as much as I did researching it. And if you check out my TikTok, I will have videos on all the other genres I missed, because there were a lot. There were a lot. And I hand cherry picked the ones that I thought you guys might like the best. So don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube at The Right Kind of Book Talk. And obviously my TikTok, if you want to find out about other genres, is TikTok is at right.kind.book.talk. Do not ask me why TikTok wouldn't allow me to have a more normal name, but that's just how it happened. You can always check out my Facebook, and that's Facebook is The Right Kind Book Talk. Instagram is The Right Kind of Book Talk, because that one's nice and normal. So what I'm going to start doing next week, I'm going to start dropping coupon codes for my book merch store. That's the bookaloriandesigns.com. And they will be valid from 24 hours from when the episode starts. And the percentage could be anywhere from 15% up to 35% off everything. Okay. If you're lucky enough to catch one of those coupon codes, you could potentially get up to 35% off everything in my store. And I'll also be doing one where there's just a free day of shipping. So you can like order to your heart's content and I will ship it free. You will have to listen to the podcast to catch the codes, because I'm going to be doing them during the episodes. And subscribe to my YouTube for updates, because I'm also going to be telling you whereabouts in the episode you can find them, because I'm a sneaky girl. Have the reading day you deserve, Book Dragons. This is Stacey Wright signing off from The Right Kind of Book Talk. And I hope to see you all next week.